You're listening to The Pulse.
Hey, Wynn Army Community Hospital in Fort Stewart. It's Kevin Larson coming at you with another episode of The Pulse. We're going to continue with the theme of the month, men's health, and talk about physical therapy and why men should seek medical help with issues surrounding physical therapy. My guest to share with you information on this topic is Major Brian C. Christensen, the Assistant Deputy Commander for Patient Services and also a Doctor of Physical Therapy here at Wynn. Sir, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
First, tell me a little bit about yourself. How did you get started in medicine and what led you to physical therapy?
Yeah, like you said, my name is Major Brian Christensen. I'm a physical therapist, have been active duty 16 years. Got my education through the Army Baylor program, which if anybody's interested in it, I think it's a great way to go, and I'd be happy to talk to you about that some other time. But went to college, knew that I wanted to do something medical, and the more I looked into musculoskeletal conditions, the more I thought this is probably the route I want to go. Definitely knew I didn't want to do the things that nurses had to do, so physical therapy is where I ended up, and it's been a great career so far.
Fascinating. Thanks for sharing that about yourself. So let's jump into the topic. So why should men seek physical therapy?
Physical therapy, it's a broad profession. In this environment, we work typically with active duty soldiers and their able-bodied dependents. Our primary focus here typically involves injury prevention, rehab from musculoskeletal injury, and human performance optimization. Anyone who feels like they want help with any of those things could benefit from talking to one of our physical therapists or even a physical therapy assistant who we have. They're very talented and capable.
So that leads me to ask a question about the number of physical therapists and other folks down there working in physical therapy in that lane. How many people do you have on staff that can lay hands on people and resuscitate a ligament or muscle that's just fallen out of alignment?
Here at Wynn, we have 7 physical therapists on staff. Well, sorry, 7 civilian staff and 4 active duty physical therapists. We all kind of function the same. We belong to Wynn and DHA. In the coming months, we'll be getting several more physical therapists assigned to H2F units out doing good work in brigade land. Additionally, down on the first floor, we have occupational therapy, and they have 5 occupational therapists that can do the same, but for elbow, wrist, and hand.
So are there any stigmas related to us men and not seeking physical therapy? And if there are any stigmas, how can we overcome those?
Well, stereotypically, men are notorious for putting off our medical conditions, right? Physical therapy is no different. A lot of the conditions we see are guys who've finally gotten tired of dealing with a nagging injury and maybe finally decided to see somebody about it years or even decades after the injury occurred. Unfortunately, by waiting to seek care, guys allow the condition to become chronic, and generally speaking, the prognosis for a chronic injury is much, much worse than for those who address the issue while it's fresh. In the case of a chronic condition, the nature of the tissue changes, the body develops inefficient motor patterns to help work around the injury, and the longer those two factors work together, the harder it is for patients and rehab professionals to overcome the disability that they cause. Research shows that physical therapy is most beneficial when patients have their initial visit with a therapist in the first 2 weeks after an injury. I think getting that message out that early intervention leads to better outcomes to patients and to their referring providers is probably the key thing we can do to overcome those negative stigmas.
So what are some issues that we could face that we should have looked at in the first 2 weeks of an injury?
Some of the common factors that we see contributing to injuries in this environment are overuse injuries from training. Those tend to build up over time, and maybe there's not a specific time in or place in time where you can point to and say that's when the injury happened. But if you think about all the stress that a body experiences during a long run or a loaded terrain march, individuals aren't conditioned properly, and all of that repetitive stress accumulates in a tissue failure. We see a lot of that in lower extremity and back injuries coming in. Trauma, if you experience trauma, that's typically when we want to see you within kind of 2 weeks of the injury. And that's no matter how well conditioned you are, you just end up being the unlucky guy that stepped in a pothole and twisted his ankle or something to that effect. And trauma affects every part of the body. We see it in shoulders, necks, back pain, knees, ankles, or from that one time kind of injury mechanism. Guys, in particular, as we get older, we start to lose muscle fiber. The fibers most responsible for strength and power go first, and that deterioration typically starts around age 35. So unfortunately, about that same time, other connective tissues start to get kind of stiff if we're not working them out regularly. We do see a lot of middle-aged guys coming in for traumatic strain. I say middle-aged in, you know, quotation marks, because that's relative too, but that's kind of the age group that come in for traumatic strains and sprains that they got from participating in activities that they used to dominate. But now their body's capacity for that activity just isn't as high as it used to be. And then there's the other one that everybody's kind of susceptible to, and that's the postural syndromes that we all get from working at desks, looking at computer screens, looking down at our phones. Those are typical in our neck pain, shoulder pain, back, hip, and knee patients.
That is absolutely fascinating. I can tell you that I fall into that middle-aged category, and I was recently reminded that I am indeed getting old, and perhaps I need to seek some therapy myself to prevent something becoming chronic. You listed a lot of things there, and those are all very important and things that, you know, we routinely associate with physical therapy and physical, you know, the muscles and all that, the major things that we think about, and the fact that men, we like to think of ourselves as muscular and all that, and that our muscles define who we are. But what about the pelvic floor? I understand that's something men that we don't routinely think of, and for those of us that are unfamiliar, can you tell us what that is and why it's important to think about your pelvic floor as a guy?
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. That's not a muscle group you typically see guys at the gym flexing in the mirror. Pelvic floor is a group of muscles and other connective tissues that support the contents of the lower abdominal cavity, kind of like a hammock. The organs that they support include the bladder, the rectum, in the women, the uterus, and in men, the prostate. Pelvic floor function, just like any other motor function that your body can do, requires the muscles to work together in a coordinated pattern, meaning that those muscles have to contract and relax to the appropriate degree and at the appropriate time. When the pelvic floor is working properly, it allows you to void your bladder and your bowels efficiently. Healthy pelvic floor is also critical for optimal sexual function in both men and women. When the pelvic floor isn't doing its job, the consequences can be physically, psychologically, and socially painful.
Wow, that is a lot to digest. That is obviously a very important muscle group that, like you said, we're not flexing in the mirror, but it has big impacts on our life. So we'll take a short break here, and when we come back, we'll talk more about the importance of physical therapy in men's health.
Introducing Q Anywhere, your stress-free prescription pickup solution. Just get in line with your DoD ID, select your pharmacy spot, and we'll text you when your prescription is ready. Text I am here when you're on your way, and we'll have your meds ready for pickup. Quick, efficient, and easy. For refills, call 912-435-6576. Q Anywhere, because life's too short to wait.
And we're back. I'm talking with Major Brian C. Christensen, the Assistant Deputy Commander for Patient Services and also a Doctor of Physical Therapy here at Wynn, about men's health and physical therapy. And just before the break, we started talking about an area that men don't often consider for their health, and that's the pelvic floor. So you touched on some of them, but what are some common other things that might occur if your pelvic floor isn't in good working order? What kind of dysfunctions might men experience?
The most common forms of pelvic dysfunction in men are urinary incontinence, fecal incontinence, and erectile dysfunction. And like I said, obviously all of those can cause some serious distress, and it's understandable why people wouldn't want to talk about those types of problems to anybody. The good news, though, is that pelvic floor dysfunction is treatable. Medical professionals are trained to discreetly evaluate, diagnose, and treat those conditions with a very high rate of success. During a medical visit, you'd probably expect your provider to ask you about symptoms that you're experiencing, to include incontinence of bowel and bladder, frequent trips to the bathroom, incomplete voiding of bowel and bladder, leaking of stool or urine, painful voiding, erectile dysfunction, or pain in the pelvic region that may or may not be associated with using the bathroom.
That's a lot to take in. So is there anything that causes that to happen? Are there risk factors that make us more prone to these types of issues? And in a broader sense, physically, are there risk factors that make us more prone to, you know, pulling a muscle or spraining a ligament?
Well, sure. Addressing pelvic floor dysfunction first, and then we'll talk about the other one later, because they are a little bit different. Being overweight and deconditioned is absolutely a factor, I guess, in pelvic floor and in musculoskeletal injuries. People with a medical history that involves connective tissue disorders, certain neurological disorders, and diabetes are at higher risk for developing pelvic floor dysfunction. Diets low in fiber can increase your risk, as well as levels of stress and anxiety. And this is where pelvic floor dysfunction and musculoskeletal dysfunction kind of veer off a little bit. We talked earlier about how men are at more risk for developing like a sprain or a strain because they get older. We just lose those muscle fibers. That's not necessarily the case in a pelvic floor dysfunction. Pelvic floor dysfunction is not a part of the normal aging process. It's tempting for us to think that the symptoms are natural because we're getting older and that we may just have to learn to live with them, but that's absolutely not the case in pelvic floor dysfunction. But you're not going to see a 60-year-old, you know, spiking a volleyball like he did when he was 20. So age does play a risk in musculoskeletal disorders.
I'm just fascinated by this topic. This is really interesting to me, because obviously I am of the gender that's affected by this, and this is pertinent information for myself to take in. So I'm learning a lot here, and I'm interested to know, is there a way to prevent pelvic floor dysfunction and also, in the broader sense, multiple muscular skeletal conditions, or just... Is there a way to not stay young, but prevent getting hurt?
As it relates to the body, I don't know that you can absolutely wipe away that risk of getting hurt as we get older. But certainly living an active lifestyle, eating right, helps. If you're going to, you know, try something new, make sure you ramp your way up to it. If you haven't been training for a marathon, don't go out and run 15 miles your first week out, kind of thing. You gotta make sure you're physically capable of doing that before you take on the challenge. That goes with cardiovascular training as well as strength training. As it relates to the pelvic floor, I think there are some lifestyle modifications that we can make if we're concerned about preventing pelvic floor dysfunction. One of those would be making sure that you're getting plenty of fiber in your diet. Straining during a bowel movement is one of the most common causes of pelvic floor dysfunction in men, and anything that we can do to reduce that strain will help. And then taking care of mental and emotional health is another protective factor, since we know that high levels of stress and anxiety are also associated with pelvic floor dysfunction. People are pretty familiar with Kegels. Kind of wanted to bring that up here. It's a stereotypical exercise that we think about when we think about pelvic floor dysfunction. If you don't know, Kegels have been around forever, and it's just a concentrated isometric contraction of the pelvic floor muscle that can be performed in any position, It's basically like doing a plank that specifically targets the pelvic floor. And the idea behind a Kegel is that with repetition, you're building strength and endurance in those muscles, and that leads to increased tone. That increased tone then better supports the organs in the lower abdominal cavity. And truthfully, Kegels are great. They're probably appropriate for 95% of us. But remember, pelvic floor dysfunction is caused by a coordination deficit in that muscle group. That means that some of the muscles are having a hard time contracting while others are having a hard time relaxing appropriately. And if a person has a pelvic floor disorder, it's possible that Kegels may not be the right exercise for them. They might need exercises that teach them how to stretch or relax certain muscles. And that's where having a physical therapist with specific pelvic floor expertise can make all the difference.
So you talked about the staff you have in occupational therapy and physical therapy and the team down there. So what other resources do we have here at Wynn Army Community Hospital to help men with physical fitness?
So with general health and wellness, I'm a big proponent of the Army Wellness Center downstairs, outside. I think that's a great, an underutilized resource. I like that you can go there and get a snapshot of where you are currently with a metabolic assessment. They'll help with body composition testing in the BOD pod. They can then help you up with goal setting resources, nutrition and physical fitness experts. And as far as I know, there's no limit to how often you can use that resource. If you want a monthly assessment of your body composition so that you can track progress, all you have to do is schedule an appointment. I really think that's a powerful tool that either people don't know about or they're not taking advantage of.
Fascinating. I've thought about doing that myself. I believe it is open to Army and DoD civilians to use that resource to get an assessment of their own well-being. I'll have to verify that, but I think that is accurate. Is that not accurate?
As I understand it, yes, it is.
Fantastic. I need to get down there and get myself assessed. I could possibly use some nutritional advice, and I'm always curious about where I am, you know, metabolically and in terms of body composition. We're about to close it out here, but you touched on this earlier with the military, the fact that our first job here at the hospital is to ensure the fighting strength of the 3rd Infantry Division. What are the specific considerations for the soldiers here that they might need to think about that might put them at higher risk for a pelvic floor issue or a muscular skeletal condition or injury?
As it relates to pelvic floor specifically, since that's what you ask about first, heavy lifting and carrying objects. We're the Army, that's what we do. We move across large expanses of land with lots of heavy things. And doing that can cause a person to do what's called a Valsalva maneuver, which is basically holding your breath to lift a heavy object, increasing like your intra-abdominal pressure to help stabilize your spine. And while that can be an effective short-term solution to lifting an object, if you do it repeatedly and for long periods of time, that increases pressure in your abdominal cavity, causing unnecessary and harmful strain on the pelvic floor muscles. So thinking about lifting heavy and often, if you're holding your breath, you're not doing yourself any favors. And then still kind of touching on the pelvic floor thing, trauma is an issue that we need to watch out for. We're constantly working in hazardous environments where slips, trips, and falls, especially those that cause you to land on your tailbone. We can all think of times where that's happened and the pain that causes. That can cause trauma to the muscles that, if it doesn't heal up right, can lead to kind of prolonged disability in that area. And then, you know, everybody's been in the field, everybody's had to eat MREs. Prolonged use of MREs has that kind of negative side effect of constipation, and that has also been linked to pelvic floor issues. So just some things that we do as soldiers that our civilian counterparts might not be exposed to, which certainly could cause a pelvic floor issue. And then just related to musculoskeletal injuries in general, we train physically 5 days a week. sometimes when we start our fitness training, it's dark. You know, we are working on unlevel surfaces, could cause some injury that way. We lift and carry heavy things that can, in addition to cause, you know, pelvic floor issues, any number of musculoskeletal injuries. So, yeah, there are some hazards involved in being a soldier. But, you know, physical therapy and the rest of the medical team, we try and minimize those as much as we can.
It's always interesting to me what I learn when I do these podcasts, like holding your breath when you're lifting something. I know from my own experience, I have done that before. I've held my breath to get that extra boost, especially with something extra heavy, to get it off the ground. I'll have to make a conscious effort to be breathing when I lift heavy things. So is there anything else you'd like to share to close out this podcast about men's health and physical therapy at large, or about the topic, the pelvic floor that we've been talking about?
Yeah, I'll just stick to the pelvic floor thing. I would reiterate that pelvic floor dysfunction is very treatable. Often the hardest step in treatment is the first one, and in that case, that means making the courageous decision to talk to your provider about it. If you're concerned about any of the symptoms that I've talked about in the podcast, please engage with your primary care doc. They'll ask appropriate questions and make sure you get to the right specialist. Like I said before, pelvic floor disorder, it's not a normal part of the aging process. It can be painful, it can be embarrassing, and it can cause serious emotional health problems, but it doesn't have to last forever.
Good point. And that's about it for this episode of The Pulse. It's been absolutely fascinating. I learned something. I learned a lot. Lots of things for me to consider about my own personal physical therapy health. Major Christensen, thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Have a good afternoon.
You too. And if you're looking for more information on physical therapy or other services here at the hospital, you can always visit win.tricare.mil. To our listeners, thank you for listening. This is Kevin signing off, and I'll catch you on the flip side.